Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
Every once in a while, I have a conversation with John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, the guru on the Pac-12. And every once in a while, I have these conversations and I go, man, I wish fans across the Pac-12 could get in on this. I wish they could ask a question. Ask Wilner a question. Ask me a question. Who's going to be the next coach at Washington? Who's going to be the next coach fired? Is Chip Kelly on the hot seat if he wins out, runs the table, wins his bowl game? John Wilner has agreed to take your phone calls. I'll take them as well because I'm here. 503-417-7575 is the number. If you're an Oregon fan, a Beavers fan, Arizona, Arizona State, Washington, Washington State, Utah, Colorado, Cal, Stanford, UCLA, USC. Hell, if you're working at the Pac-12 conference offices, if your name's Woody Dixon, if your name's Larry Scott, you're welcome to call in. We'll take your phone calls. I doubt Larry Scott will call in. I doubt it. Now, if we were giving away a marble bathtub, maybe. John Wilner, Bay Area News Group, San Jose Mercury News, one of the best teammates you can ever have. I was a teammate with him for a brief stretch. It was a magical run. Brief stretch, right around 2001. We were both working at the Mercury News, and I feel like I'm working a little with him now because I just love his work, and he's joining us. Wilner, thanks for making time.
Happy to do it. Should be fun.
Let's take some calls. Now, you got a lot of expertise. We're going to pepper their calls in with my questions. Maybe Peter and Zach have questions, or maybe even Adam, who is a production assistant here, has a question about the Pac-12. But are you hydrated, Wilner? Because we could go for a while here.
I'm not taking any calls or questions from Zach. Everybody else is fine.
Everybody else is good. Let me ask you first. Were you surprised? You were not surprised by Jimmy Lake. You had predicted it via Twitter earlier. What made you think Jimmy Lake was in trouble?
I just thought that incident on the sideline, which is bad, and no matter what is bad, kind of gave Washington the justification to make a change that they wouldn't have had otherwise. Even though, you know, there was a lot of reasons to think Lake was not going to be the answer and was really struggling, it was going to be hard to, I think, fire a second-year coach for poor on-the-field performance. But that incident basically gave them, you know, cover in some ways to make a change that they wouldn't maybe have had otherwise.
They let him go. They'll now turn to a search firm. Do you have a sense, Jen Cohn, the athletic director there, do you have a sense of how hard she'll lean into the search firm, or you tell me?
My guess is that she's not going to lean hard into the search firm for advice on candidates. She's going to lean hard into the search firm on the vetting process, background information, you know, stuff that executive search firms do for important placements, right? And the interesting thing with this, you know, it's not just about, do you have DUIs on your record, all that kind of stuff. I think that, and this is not specific to Washington, I think it's going to happen everywhere, especially in the Pac-12. These search firms might now start asking questions of candidates like, are you vaccinated? What are your political leanings? Because that's the time in the world we live in at this point, right? And the situation in Washington State that unfolded during the season, I mean, that's everybody's going to be asking these coaches, what's your position on the vaccine? What's your position on the booster, right? It's now much more than just do you have a criminal record. So I think she'll use the search firm for that. But I think that in terms of evaluating candidates and what you're going to work, you know, she's going to use her own expertise, and she'll probably, she should rely on, you know, Chris Peterson, maybe a couple other people to help her.
John Wilner is with us. If you're listening across the footprint in the Pac-12, we'll take your phone calls now at 503-417-7575. Grab that first open line. Peter Sampson, Zach, do either of you have a question for the great Wilner?
Yeah, Wilner, I guess I have one for you off the top of my head. What's your sense right now of the Cal Bears football program, and do you believe that Justin Wilcox is on the hot seat right now, or is his leash a little bit longer?
Well, they're certainly struggling. First of all, unless something unexpected happens, they will be able to field the team this week against Stanford. Their testing has gone much better the last couple of rounds, and I think that they should be good to go. And Chase Garber certainly at this point is cleared to go. Bigger picture, Wilcox is not on the hot seat at all. They love Wilcox. No program has gotten hit harder by the COVID situation and COVID protocols than Cal did. I mean, they didn't have their offensive line the last season. So they don't want him to go anywhere. I think the question is whether he's fed up and he wants to go someplace else where there are fewer obstacles internally on campus and externally in the community to fielding a winning team. So to me, that's the biggest question. And if he is willing to leave, he will have some offers. He is very well respected in the coaching industry.
The rest of that department, is there something going on in Berkeley? Because basketball, it's been a great fall for them. Football's just been, you know, I kind of give Wilcox a pass because I think they had some, you know, issues with COVID last season even that really kept them from being able to get together and practice. But is there some disruption in Berkeley that is causing widespread athletic department problems?
It's just a tough place. The protocols they've had to follow, the testing, you know, is more stringent there than in most or anywhere else. But it's a tough, both football and men's basketball are really tough. I think men's basketball in some ways is even tougher because they don't even have their own practice gym. So it's really hard to recruit when everybody else has got their own practice facility. Cal does not. You know, the admissions are certainly an issue. And I think that for both Cal, and this is a little bit bigger picture, but I think both Bay Area schools are going to have a harder time going forward, you know, now with the transfer portal, because it is much more difficult for them to get transfers accepted into their graduate programs and their undergraduate programs because of the admissions bar. And so, you know, restocking your roster that a lot of schools can do no problem. It's like free agency for everybody else. For Cal and Stanford, it's a little bit harder. And I think we could see both programs in both sports struggle a little bit.
Let's go to the phone lines. Got some people holding that want to talk to John Wilner and ask some questions. Let's go to Roy in Portland, first of all. And by the way, if you want to call in, 503-417-7575 is a number. Roy in Portland, you're on with the great John Wilner.
Hey, John. I have a couple of observations about the Pac-12. With Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, it's going to be twice as hard for the Pac-12 to recruit kids. I mean, you got beautiful campuses in the Pac-12. It's kids that will come from the South and from the Midwest to play in the Pac-12 if you got something to sell them. But when you got coaches like Sarkisian at Texas, you don't think he's going to be invading California for the kids to come to Texas or the West Coast because he knows the landscape? I mean, you're on the verge of becoming almost a Mountain West conference. I mean, you have to do something because I don't see, with the landscape changing, I don't see how you survive as a relevant conference if you don't do something in recruiting. I mean, what are these coaches selling these kids? You just can't depend on with the geographical location. You can't depend on the states that the Pac-12 is in. They don't have talent. You can't beat a SEC school with talent coming from Utah and Montana and Washington, Oregon. There's no talent. The only talent is coming out of California. You may have a Justin Herbert every now and then coming out of Oregon, but you got to get into the South, man. You got to get into the Southeast. You got to get into the Midwest, the Detroits, the Ohios, you know, in order to compete. And until you do that, the Pac-12 it's on the verge of being irrelevant as far as I'm concerned.
Roy's in Portland. John Wilner, respond to that.
I think basically what Roy's saying is the Pac-12 is facing an existential crisis, and I agree with him. I would say, from a talent standpoint, I think that there's enough skill position talent. Like, there are enough receivers, running backs, quarterbacks, right? I mean, heck, there are tons of elite quarterbacks, and they're all leaving the conference. So step number one is to keep the best players, whether it's Seattle, Portland, Bay Area, L.A., Phoenix, Utah, keep the best players at home is certainly at the skill positions is the number one priority, right? I mean, that they can't have, you know, all the Georgia and Alabama starting quarterbacks from Southern California, right? That's a big problem, no doubt about that. The other issue, though, is the linemen, right? And anybody who watches carefully, you know, you Pac-12 offensive and defensive linemen don't look like the linemen in the SEC and the Big Ten, right? It's just there's a physical difference, and the West is not producing elite linemen at the rate that it used to. There's no question about that. I think that there's a whole lot of reasons for it, including, you know, population demographics and all that stuff. But there's no question that's a big problem, and I don't know how the Pac-12 is going to solve that, especially when you consider the number of players that no longer are playing high school football in California because the parents are worried about head trauma. The drop-off in high school participation in California is much greater than it is in Texas or Florida, Georgia, Ohio, all the feeder states for the Big Ten and SEC. I don't know what the Pac-12 is going to do to offset that. It's a big problem.
Yeah. Well, let me let other people ask questions. I've got a couple more, too, because I feel like could the answer be, you know, a Clemson scenario where one team in the Pac-12, like Oregon, they're just well-positioned now, that's why I bring them up, wins and brings some credibility, then all of a sudden recruits start to say, hey, I can go to the Pac-12 and I can be part of the playoff. You know, how big of a impact is that in your mind, Wilner, getting a team there, just getting a team to be part of the tournament, first of all?
Yeah, well, it's huge because, I mean, that's part of not only attracting kids from the other regions, but keeping the kids at home. Because the reason, you know, the Bryce Youngs are leaving to go to Alabama is they want to play for a national title and they want to be first-round draft picks. And the Pac-12 can't show these kids that if you stay here, you're going to play, you're going to get the playoff because they haven't been there in 5 years. So whether it's USC, USC is the one, you know, that should be the leading on this. USC, Oregon, Washington, getting a team back into the playoff will help change the narrative and help kids, you know, decide to stay out west. I think that the coaching hires at Washington and USC are absolutely critical for the Pac-12 right now, especially SC. If they get somebody who is a big name, that could change the entire dynamic of these kids leaving California. They'll want to play at SC. They'll want to stay out here. But SC's got to get it right.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, on with us. Ken in Portland, you get an opportunity to talk to Wilner. Go ahead, Ken.
Hey, first off, I appreciate what both of you guys do as far as educating the people in your footprints. What I want to ask, John, is what is your opinion of George Kliavkos? Does he really understand the hole that Larry Scott has put the Pac-12 in, especially with respect to football? And the things that I'm talking about, nine-game conference schedules that always diminish, water down our wins, and give us fewer top 25 teams at the end of the year. The ESPN-SEC hegemony as far as how they control the narrative surrounding college football. CFP access, the fact that because they control who gets into the invitational, and that's essentially what it is, we're marginalized. We're left on the outside. And the last thing is this Pac-12 network. What's the plan? Does he know what he wants to do with it? Because right now the Pac-12 network is more of a millstone around the Pac-12's neck rather than bringing in the money. So does Kliavkos know what he needs to do to get us out of this hole?
That's a good question. John Wilner, go ahead.
I'll be curious to see what you think. I think he gets it. And part of the reason I think he gets it is because before he even started, so his first day on the job was July 1st, sometime middle of June, third week of June, he welcomed all the athletic directors to Las Vegas. You know, he was living in Vegas, working at President MGM resorts and entertainment division, he invited all the athletic directors to Vegas, and they spent the entire day together, and they unloaded all of the problems on him, you know, that the conference has experienced, all, you know, their issues at the campus level, issues at the conference level, policy issues, execution issues. They basically told him, here's what we need, here's what's wrong, here's what needs to get fixed. My impression of him, and I've spent some time with him, he's a very good listener, and he knows what he doesn't know, which is a gigantic change from his predecessor. So I think he gets it. I think he gets it at the 40,000-foot level for sure, and how all of these dynamics interplay with the other conferences, with the media, with football policy. I do think he gets it. It's going to take time to change everything because some of these are big-picture issues, and some of them are contractual issues you can't change overnight. I do absolutely think he gets it. As far as the Pac-12 networks, there's nothing he can do. They got contracts for the next couple of years. Once those contracts end, starting with the football season in 2024, I think you'll see some changes for the better, but there's nothing he can do about it now.
I agree with you on
Kliavkov. What do you think, John?
I agree with you on Kliavkov. I think he's a leader. I think he's a unifier. I think he was smart to come in and not just clean house. I might have cleaned house because I'm just sick of some of the Pac-12 people. But he sees the value in sitting and waiting. And now that I watch him sit and wait, I understand that he didn't want to come in and be like, hey, I'm reinventing everything. We're moving the headquarters. And I think there was wisdom in that now because they needed to get their feet underneath him. I like that he asked questions like he didn't like the way that traditionally college football teams schedule. You know, why are they scheduling 10 or 12 or 15 years out where we don't even know who the coach is going to be or if the programs are going to be any good? Why not leave some open dates and keep some flexibility to set up good match, you know, make some good matches and some compelling, ACC, Pac-12, Big Ten, Pac-12 matchups? And I like everything that he's saying. I also think he just thinks outside the box and he understands how to market and sell events, created that baseball tournament. I think he'll be good for the Pac-12 because I think he's going to find some revenue that hasn't been out there otherwise. We got some more phone calls, Hill Wilner. Let's go to Kurt, who's in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Kurt, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's a treat to get to talk to the Pac-12 guru. We've been chatting this morning about the level of coverage we're getting from ESPN in regards to, you know, maybe an A, B, C, D, or E kind of a coverage. When I was in high school, we had the varsity team, we had JV1, JV2, the freshman team. It kind of feels like the Pac-12 a lot of time gets the eighth grade team for announcers and coverage of games out here. I'd just like to get your take on, you know, how are we going to battle against ESPN and the SEC biased and the fact that all the coverage goes to the SEC? I just wonder what maybe TV looks like for us as far as the attention we get maybe in the next. I know it's not going to happen right away, but in the next 3 or 4 years, are we going to get some coverage out here that's, you know, at least equal to, you know, game coverage? Are we going to have another network that pays as much attention to us as ESPN pays to SEC? I'd just love to get your take on the media coverage that we should expect, hopefully, in the future.
All right. Wilner, to that point, where do you see that answer being?
Does ESPN still exist after what you did to them today?
They exist. Privately, I think they're happy because I think Disney was just squeezing them to the point where they were having to cut. And finally, they go, hey, we have no excuse for this. We got to get a new truck here because this truck isn't working.
Yeah, you put the screws to them. That was great. So here's what I would say. If you think that there's a lot of SEC coverage on ESPN, you haven't seen nothing yet because it's going to get worse because they have the SEC game of the week that's been on CBS for all those years. That's moving to ESPN and ABC. Disney is all in with the SEC going forward. There's going to be SEC doubleheaders on ABC and ESPN at the same time coming up on Saturdays in a few years. So what that means is the Pac-12 has got to find some alternate outlets for its media coverage, right? And that's all going to happen in about a year when they renegotiate their TV deals. And what I think the conference needs to do is find some new partners, right? CBS wants to maintain a foothold in college football. They're no longer going to have the SEC game of the week at 3:30 Eastern. The Pac-12 should try to slide into that spot with a game of the week. It's network television. It's 100 million households. That would be a good outlet for the Pac-12. Pac-12 probably needs to take advantage of some streaming opportunities. I think ESPN is worthwhile at that 7:30 window with a better production truck, but that's a pretty good window. But basically, the Pac-12 is going to have to rely on multiple partners and divvy out its football and basketball content in a way that it hasn't done it before. More diverse, because there's not going to be as many broadcast windows available on ESPN with their new contracts kicking in with the SEC.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. Mark in Portland, Brian and Eugene, you guys are going to go next. I have two lines open at 503-417-7575. Wilner's been kind enough to stick around. I'm going to put him on hold. We'll be right back with more John Wilner on the Pac-12. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, has been kind enough to join us. You can read him on Oregon Live now. His Pac-12 hotline is a great follow. His newsletter is a great follow. Hell, he's a good follow on Twitter, too. It's funny. Wilner's been kind enough to stick around. We got a whole bunch of questions, Wilner. Are you ready to go here? We're just going to pepper you here.
I'm ready.
All right. For those of you who want to call in, I don't care where you live. If you live in the Midwest, you live on the East Coast, you live in Florida, you're welcome to call in at 503-417-7575. Mark in Portland is called in. Mark, you got a question for Wilner. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, John. It's nice to be on with you. I got like a five-part question. In 1998, I felt that when we gave the powers that be control of the Rose Bowl, it was a big mistake. And it was, you know, confirmed when in 2001, when they, in my opinion, the powers that be at that time staged the Rose Bowl and kicked Oregon out of the Rose Bowl, and Nebraska, who lost to Colorado 62-36, got to play for the national title. Also, USC, seven times under Pete Carroll champions, never played the SEC champion for a BCS title. How does, in a normal playoff, I'm assuming those teams would have met four or five times in that seven-year period. 2011-2012, the BCS. Alabama didn't play anybody else's conference champion but won back-to-back titles. That 2012 year, Oregon had their best team on both sides of the ball, Mariota's redshirt freshman year. So I think the biggest step for the Pac-12, and they should have done it in 98, is to demand an 18 playoff where your conference champion is going to get in to the playoff and control their own destiny and be able to sell that to the kids coming to their school. Because if I was a five-star athlete, I'd want to play in the SEC. The playoff is basically rigged for them. They're going to have at least one and probably two teams in a four-team playoff every year. Alabama played LSU in 2011 for the championship, and no other conference champions were allowed to be in the postseason tournament. It's absurd to me. And so I think the biggest step for the Pac-12 is to be able to tell they're the people coming to play for them, that they have a chance. All they have to do is win their conference title, and they will be eliminated from the playoff, not in a committee in a room by pundits.
Yeah, so Wilner, respond to that. Like, you know, I do think you need a real playoff, but what did you hear there in Mark's call?
Well, I don't think they're going to have an 18 playoff. There's too much resistance from other conferences. I would bet heavily that it will be a 12-team playoff. And the question is going to be whether there's going to be two options for automatic bids. Will it be the five power conferences and then the champions of the five power conferences and then the champion of the group of five and then six at-larges? Or will they take the six highest-ranked conference champions? Those are the two models that are being discussed. The Pac-12 is pushing for for the first, where the Pac-12 champion would have an automatic bid into a 12-team playoff. That would also create opportunity for the conference to get one or even two at-large teams in. It is going to happen. There will be a 12-team playoff. Nobody knows exactly when, maybe 2023, maybe 2024. It's going to expand, and there will be a spot for the Pac-12, I believe. And that will help, because then if you're Oregon, you know, you don't mind scheduling Ohio State and BYU and Boise State in the same year, because you know if you win the conference, you're getting into the playoff. So your record, your non-conference losses won't matter as much. So I think that the commissioner and the athletic directors are definitely pushing for a 12-team playoff, and that's what we'll see.
Let's go to more calls. I love this stuff. Brian and Eugene has a question about New Year's Six bowl games. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, good afternoon. A little bit away from policy here, and just a couple of quick questions. So assuming Oregon takes care of business in Salt Lake City this weekend and then wins the Civil War and finishes 11-1 and moves on to the conference title game, if they lose the conference title game to presumably Utah and finish 11-2, do you feel there's room for Oregon to receive a New Year's Six bid, or do you think they will be pushed off to the Alamo Bowl like what happened to Utah a couple of years ago, where there's no motivation and they just went in and got slaughtered by Texas in the Alamo Bowl? And it's happened so often, dating back all the way to even Cal in the mid-2000s, where a deserving Pac-12 team does not get a New Year's Six bid, and they're shuffled off to a lower-tier bowl in their own conference lineup.
Yeah, let's pepper Wilner with that one. What happens to Oregon? They get to the Pac-12 title game and lose.
I don't think it's out of the question that they would still get an at-large bid. And you know, the committee slots teams for those bowls, for the non-playoffs, it's a geographic deal because they want to make it, you know, workable for the fans. So if Oregon were to finish 11-2, especially if it's like, let's say it's a close loss, right, to Utah, I think there'd be a chance they could end up in the Fiesta Bowl. It would depend on what else happens because, you know, there's a rule. You got to be top 12 in the final standing. So it would depend where Oregon, you know, how far they fell, right? And part of that, so part of the calculation, and it's a very layered deal, but Oregon needs Utah to win, to beat Colorado, for sure, because if Utah's ranked, then an Oregon loss doesn't have as great a repercussions for the Ducks. If Utah's unranked, then it could be a bigger hit. So there's a lot of moving pieces, but bottom line is I think Oregon would have a chance to get to the Fiesta at 11-2 if it's a close game, but there's so many moving pieces in the other leagues that there's no way to know right now.
I'm looking at Utah, and if let's say Oregon beats them this week. Oregon wins this one, then they rematch in the Pac-12 title game in Vegas on December 3rd, and Oregon beats them again. That's five losses for Utah. At that point, I don't think they're ranked. Do you?
It's going to be really hard for them to be ranked. They need a – if they're going to lose to the Ducks, it's got to be a close loss. That's part of Oregon's problem. It's almost a no-win situation. Because if they beat Utah twice, then Utah's might be unranked. So it takes away from those victories. If they lose to Utah, they're out of the playoff. And all of this gets back to the losses that Utah and the Pac-12 suffered in September. Utah losing to San Diego State and BYU. Those are coming home to roost now with the rankings. ASU's lost to BYU. That's affecting the losses have piled up, making it harder for the Pac-12 to get teams into the top 25, and so Oregon is in a very difficult situation. If they beat Utah, they're undermining their own resume.
Bob is in Roseburg listening on our newest affiliate, 1490 The Score in Roseburg. Bob, go ahead. You're on with John Wilner.
Hi, I'm a longtime subscriber to DirecTV. And I'm not able to see the Pac-12 network. Do you think that will change anytime soon?
Distribution of the Pac-12 network, Wilner. Does it get on DirecTV, in your opinion?
No chance in the next couple years. Maybe once the new media contracts start in the fall of 2024, maybe. But, I mean, what's DirecTV going to be like at that point, right? I mean, that's another issue, too. It's certainly not what it was 5 or 6 years ago. But there's no – because of the contracts – because of the situation, AT&T has walked away from the Pac-12. It's not going to be on DirecTV in the next couple football seasons.
Let's take one more here, and we'll continue this with John Wilner, by the way. He's agreed to stick around for a while. But Daryl's in Oregon City. Daryl, you got a question. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm a Beaver fan, so my interest is, did you foresee the University of Washington making an offer to Jonathan Smith that simply financially could not turn down?
Good question. Daryl wants to know, would Washington reach back into their recent past and go after Jonathan Smith? Has he done enough, Wilner, to get their attention?
I think his reputation is enough that yes. If I'm Washington, I would absolutely, you know, back channel that and see if he's interested in leaving. I don't know if he would be. This is his fourth year. It's his alma mater. He's clearly building something. But if you're the Huskies, it couldn't hurt, right? He's a terrific coach. And part of the appeal that he's going to have to Washington is what's happened to Washington since he left, right? He was there for the playoff run. And since he left after the 2017 season, their offense has not been very good. And so it's almost like he's grown to legendary status in Seattle as a play caller in some ways. So I'm sure that it would make a lot of their constituents very happy if Washington reached out to Smith. But I also wonder, he's a Pasadena kid, right? And I don't know that he's not interested in moving back home. We know USC's got an opening. It's very possible UCLA's going to have an opening too. So whatever happens, I think that he's got a lot of leverage, and he may end up with a new contract from the Beavers before January's out.
I agree with that. I talked to Scott Barnes, the athletic director, after the game on Saturday. I walked by him and said, hey, I realize that you are going to have to pay this guy, and you're going to have to pay his assistants. I also know that means season ticket prices are probably going up. And he said, now you're thinking like an athletic director. So I think that's on his radar. Wilner, you got time to stick around for one more segment?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it. More questions with John Wilner, Jim and Eugene, Jeff in Portland. You're coming up. Line up behind him at 503-417-7575. Man, this has been a great conversation. We're going to continue it. We'll podcast the whole thing if you missed it or you want to share it with friends, but I think it's valuable. John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, covers the crud out of this conference, has been with us and has been answering your questions across the Pac-12 footprint. 503-417-7575 is the number. I have two lines open. Make that one line open. Jeff is in Portland. He wants to ask John Wilner a question. Go ahead, Jeff.
This is something I've been mulling around in my mind. I'm interested in both of your takes. This is about recruiting and the impact of the portal. Last year, we had all the super seniors, COVID. This is the first year, it seems, where the recruiting cycle for high school kids is going to be more impacted by the portal. Jonathan Smith obviously has made great use of the portal. Do you both see high school recruiting staying at the same level, or do you see schools maybe backing off getting as many high school kids as they can because they know they're going to go to the portal to fill specific needs? This is the first time we're going to see high school recruiting versus the portal, and I'm just curious what your guys' take is on that.
Yeah, I think I'll go first on this one. I have talked to coaches in the conference, both in men's basketball and in football, who say that they are leaving some spots for the portal, I don't think every program's going to do that, but I think programs like Oregon State, Washington State, Arizona are going to live in the portal a little bit. Wilner, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jonathan Smith's done a great job with that. Part of the issue, too, is there are going to be three high school recruiting classes affected by the COVID situation, because everybody who was in school last year got an extra year. So it's not just that there were super seniors, but the freshmen last year are still freshmen. So now there's this backup that's going to last for years, and it's going to squeeze opportunities for several cycles of high school players. The NCAA is working on, expanding, right? They've given, there's like seven additional spots this year for recruiting, for transfers. They're trying to do things to basically open up the pipeline because of the logjam that was created by the COVID situation. And the portal's going to continue to play a crucial role for everybody, but it's definitely, you know, the blue blood schools that can get the 4- and 5-star guys are going to continue to probably lean on that, whereas the schools that can't get them will you know, mine the portal. And you know, Oregon State's got a great pitch, right? Oh, it didn't work out for you at Nebraska. It didn't work out for you at Oklahoma. Come here. You've got one more chance. Come here. We're going to teach you. We're going to make you better. And then you're going to get a chance to go to the NFL from here. And it's a great pitch that Jonathan Smith's got going on.
Jim is in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene. Jim, you're on with John Wilner of the Mercury News. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, I enjoy both of your coverage provided by both of you guys. And I've moved here after living in Chapel Hill, Ann Arbor, on the East Coast, and now I'm in Eugene. So I would just like to say to you that the people here are so far away from the rivals. If you're in the Midwest or on the East Coast, you're so close to your rivals. And I think the lack of rivalry between – how can you have a rivalry between schools 2,000 miles away? So I think that's a problem for the Pac-10 to 12 to overcome in terms of the proximity of your rival and the heated nature, especially when it comes to football.
Yeah, but are you talking like Oregon State? They're only like 40 miles away. What are you talking about more specifically? More
right,
like
right, but then you drive 350 miles to your southern rival.
I see. Okay. So the geographic footprint of the conference is vast. Is that what you're saying? Okay.
And the people on the East Coast do not understand how far it is from Seattle to Tucson.
Yeah. And do you know, also, can I ask you something, Jim, in being in the East Coast, how tuned in were you to games? Because I've had friends who moved east to like Tampa and other places, and they go, oh my gosh, nobody even talks about the Pac-12.
Well, the Pac-10 and the Pac-8 were more followed more closely on the East Coast than the Pac-12. 12
okay.
is now.
Okay. All right. Wilner, let me ask you about the footprint of the conference. Is that a concern?
There's nothing they can do about it. I think it has a little bit of an impact. But, you know, what the caller just said about the Pac-8 and Pac-10 being more followed, why do you think that is? Well, UCLA's winning 10 national titles under John Wooden, and USC's winning 7 national titles in football. When the big brand schools are really good, the people on the East Coast notice. They're not thinking Florida or North Carolina. They're not thinking about the Pac-8 or the Pac-10 or the Pac-12, but they are identifying with the schools, especially when the LA schools in those two sports are really good because of the history. And that's what the conference has missed since, well, UCLA Final Four last year. Before that, it was, 2008? And USC football, right? That's why those two schools and those two sports are so important for the conference. And the fact that UCLA is number, 2 in basketball is a huge deal for the Pac-12 right now.
Well put. Matt is in Portland. He wants to ask about the big bodies on the offensive and defensive lines. Matt, what do you mean by that?
I've just been hearing just on the announcer saying, hey, Oregon's, you know, kind of manhandling, you know, Washington up front and stuff like that. And I've been noticing that Oregon's been getting bigger. And I've been wanting to know, like, if you see, you know, with one, Mario Cristobal's recruiting, and just kind of with the way that they've been able to handle themselves and be in the national playoff hunt, you know, deep into November here, if he stays on this trajectory, do you see them being able to, one, recruit in the SEC and or be able to play on the same level with the with how he's been recruiting with the SEC and the Big Ten?
Wilner, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think we saw it. They went head-to-head with Ohio State in the trenches, and they did just fine 2 months ago, right? I mean, I think that they have recruited at a level on the lines of scrimmage that would give them, if they were in the playoff, they would be able to handle themselves. We saw it on the field. This is, you know, Oregon, though, is kind of the exception at this point, right? SC used to be able to do it. SC could do it if they get things right. Same with Washington. But it is certainly harder for the other schools to recruit the caliber of player at the line of scrimmage that could, say, hold up in a semifinal, you know, under the glare of the semifinals when everybody's playing their best and it's, you know, NFL prospects on each side of the line of scrimmage.
Good point. I'm curious to see. I would love Oregon to make it because I'd like to see that. You know, I just want to see, do the Piles, you know, does Oregon get driven off the ball? Can Oregon compete with this offensive line? Because we've heard so much about it. Mike is in Portland. Mike, go ahead. You're on with John Wilner.
Yeah, John, I wanted to talk to you about what I think is a huge mistake of the NCAA going to a 12-team playoff. I think it's fantastic that they're willing to expand. But if they do go to 12, I think they should go to 16 because I know what's going to happen. Four teams are going to get a bye, and at least two of those teams are going to be SEC teams. And then they're going to win their, or get a bye in the first round. Then they get to go play the lowest seed. And I'm guessing that game is probably going to be at the home field of the team that gets the bye. So we're going to end up with the same thing we have now when we get to the Final Four. I just think the NCAA basketball tournament is fantastic because – everybody has an equal opportunity. If we go to 12 teams, it's going to be such a huge advantage for the four teams that get a bye that we're going to end up with the same exact situation we have now with a bunch of SEC teams in the Final Four.
Yeah, I understand why the SEC wants 12 because they're going, hey, we can get three or four teams in there. Wilner, how do you see it?
The SEC wants total domination. That is their outlook. They're not interested in participation. They are in it for domination, right? And they're not. They don't want eight. They want to keep it as it is right now at four because it's doing just fine for them, or go to 12. You know, there was some talk about 16, but it just never gained traction among the 10 conference commissioners. Everybody just kind of felt like it was too big, too many games that first. Because you'd have to open, you know, you'd have a round of eight games, right? And where do you put that round? What does that do to the bowl, the existing bowls? Does it water the product down too much? There just wasn't much interest in that. It was either going to be, you know, they were worried if they went from four to eight that was just eight was basically a stepping stone, and they'd eventually get to 12. So let's just go from 4 to 12 and cut out the middleman. But 16 never got any traction.
Quickly, Pete's in San Diego. We got 2 minutes, Pete, so you got like 30 seconds. Go ahead.
No problem. It's easy. Hey, John, before the season started, you picked the Washington Huskies to win the North. Explain to me how you came to that pathetic decision.
Look at Pete in San Diego. Wilner? What did you see in Washington?
You know, I don't think I actually did. I picked them originally, but then when they lost their best defensive player, I think I picked Oregon. You know, I thought the Huskies would be better than they are. You know, regardless, I picked them second. I'm pretty surprised at what's happened, and clearly it was, you know, they had a lot of problems on offense. But once they lost ZTF, you know, that was a huge blow to them. That's like Oregon losing Thibodeau, right? It just a
a pocket crusher. So I kind of backed off the Husky pick.
Well, I think everybody thought it was going to be Oregon and Washington in the North, and there have been some surprises. Oregon State's been better, so I don't blame you, you know, for doing that. I think everybody circled that game and said it was going to be a great game. Wilner, I appreciate you doing this. It's been fantastic. We'll podcast it. We'll put it on Oregon Live. We'll blast it all over social media. Anything you want to promote that you have coming up this week quickly?
Well, sure. Thanks. Tomorrow, we're going to take a look at Pac-12 football recruiting. You know, you had a bunch of questions about that. And we are 1 month from the early signing window, which is now basically responsible for 70 or 80% of the recruiting classes happening in December. It's December 15th to 17th. So I asked a few analysts how the Pac-12 stands up right now, month out. And
we'll do it.
They weren't real encouraged. They weren't real encouraged.
That's coming up. Wilner, thank you.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.